Welcome to Horse First. This is a podcast about beginning with the horse, about paying attention before we explain and listening before we decide what something means, which, as it turns out, takes a bit more skill than it sounds. It's not about blame. It's not about being right. It's about widening the view and learning to carry responsibility without hardening. I'm Lockie Phillips. This is a space for curiosity, steady practice, and skill that keeps the horse at the center. Let's begin. Normal. Normal in the horse world is a powerful disguise. Most harm doesn't appear to arrive dramatically. Most harm doesn't announce itself, and most harm doesn't look like cruelty. It rarely, rarely looks like someone doing something that they know is wrong. Most harm arrives quietly, wrapped in routine, carried in habits that once felt reasonable, helpful, or even kind. It arrives dressed as normal. And I know very little about normal. And normal has a particular power, perhaps because normality dulls curiosity sometimes. What we see every day stops registering as information. What we repeat stops feeling like a choice. What everyone does stops feeling like something we could question. In barns all over the world, stables and fields, especially, normal can be one of the most dangerous disguises there is. Not because people don't care, I hasten to add. Of course people care, but because caring without noticing is surprisingly easy. I'd like to be very clear about something at the start of this episode. This is not about blame, and it's not about pointing fingers, and it's not about calling anyone out. This is an episode about noticing, because noticing is the step that comes before change, before repair, and before doing better. And noticing doesn't require guilt. It just requires attention. You don't have to be doing something wrong to benefit from asking better questions. And the most dangerous word in any barn, stable, field, or arena right now might be normal. Not because normal is evil, but because normal is quiet. And quiet things are easy to stop seeing. So there's a moment that happens when horse people get deep enough into the sport, the hobby, the lifestyle, where we tend to stop asking why. Most people who work with horses start out very curious. They ask questions, they watch closely, they wonder why one horse reacts and another doesn't, why one horse complies and another doesn't, why one horse gives more than another, etc. We notice differences. But somewhere along the way, this curiosity often gets trained out of us, not deliberately, not maliciously. It happens socially, because asking why in barns can be expensive. It can mark you as maybe inexperienced. It can be perceived as you being difficult. It can mark you as someone who doesn't yet get it, whatever it is. And when you're trying to belong to community, to your hobby, to your sport, to your recreation, to your family, to your spouse, to your friends, to the person standing next to you who chose the same incredibly expensive pastime, when you're trying to learn, and when you're trying to be taken seriously, you learn very quickly which questions are welcome and which ones are quietly discouraged. This is just how it's done. This is normal. He's always been like that. That's just how horses are. That's how we have to train them. These phrases and more like them do very important, maybe important's not the right word. These phrases and more like them do very impactful social work on us. They smooth things over. They keep things moving. They prevent disruption. They also replace thinking. And over time, competence can harden into certainty, but not the kind of certainty that breeds confidence from competence. I'm speaking of a different kind of certainty, a certainty that closes doors rather than opens them. And when you've done something for years, it's easy to confuse familiarity and routine with understanding. But familiarity doesn't equal understanding. Repetition does not automatically create insight. It often just creates fluency in whatever's already happening. And fluency sometimes can be dangerous too, because it feels like knowledge even when it isn't. Especially when the system around you rewards confidence more than curiosity. Especially when asking for a pause or even pausing to ask why slows everyone down. So the questions get quieter, shorter, and eventually they disappear. Not because you stopped caring, dear listener. You didn't stop caring. None of us did. Most of us didn't. But because you learned that caring too visibly came with consequences. Barns are really powerful learning environments. Stables, fields. I use the term barn ubiquitously to describe an equestrian environment in the horse world. They're powerful learning environments, not just because of the skills we pick up, but because of what these environments can sometimes teach us to ignore. Every culture has blind spots, and the horse world is no exception. Some things get laughed off. Some things get dismissed. Some things get reframed until they sound harmless. A horse that won't stand still becomes dramatic. A horse that won't load becomes stubborn. A horse that shuts down becomes quiet or easy. Coping behaviors are relabeled as personality traits, as character. And this goes so far that even the horses start to believe it. And once something has a name that sounds normal, it stops being examined. There's an important difference between a shared wisdom and a shared avoidance. Shared wisdom, I think, deepens perception when we share our wisdom with each other. Shared avoidance seems to narrow our perception. Group settings, social settings, amplify this effect. If everyone around you is unfazed about what they're seeing and what's happening, it becomes harder to trust your own instinct. You start asking yourself, maybe I am overthinking. And listen, my name is Lockie Overthinking Phillips. Have we met? You start asking yourself, am I like too sensitive or something? You start wondering, maybe this is just part of horses. And sometimes, yes, horses are challenging. Of course, they're challenging. They're large, complex animals living in even more complex human systems. That's an exceptionally nuanced craft to study. If you've picked horses as a craft, as an art, you've picked one of the hardest crafts and arts people could try to master. You've picked one of the hardest ones. But complexity should sharpen our attention, shouldn't it? Not dull it. Instead, this normalization I'm talking about often teaches us what not to see. It teaches us which signs don't count, which questions slow things down, and which observations are inconvenient. Slowly, perception itself gets trained. We don't I would like to invite you to come and learn with me inside the EH School. This is a low-cost, high-value, flexible membership for horse people who want more than just quick fixes and louder answers. Inside, you will find a growing video library, a thoughtful off-social media discussion space, and live coaching calls with myself and often with my team, all designed to help you get to the heart of what's really happening in your horsemanship. This is not about following a method. It's about building clarity, skill, and confidence with the horses always placed as the first priority. If you're looking for a steady place to learn, reflect, and progress your practical skills without force of horses or overwhelm of yourself, I hope you will come and feel at home with us in the EH School. You can find the sign up by the link in the show notes, or you can visit emotionalhorsemanship.com and navigate to the EH School sign up. Just learn skills in barns. We learn what's worth noticing. Horses, I think, and I've always found, horses almost always tell us very early what's going on. They just don't usually tell us loudly and early. If they're telling us loudly, most of the time they're telling us late. Before a horse bolts, there's a problem, something underneath the surface that maybe we've glazed over as normal. Before a horse refuses, there's hesitation that we believe is normal. Before a horse breaks down entirely, there's compensation that we believe is just them. Subtle changes in posture and biomechanics, a shortened stride, holding of the breath, too much breath here, not enough there, a dullness that wasn't there before, even a mania, manic behavior that wasn't there before. Rigidity where the horse used to swing freely across their back. Speed where the horse used to just amble along easy. Stillness also that looks like calm, but the horse feels absent. Horses speak really quietly long before they shout, which is why the moniker horse whisperer, which I know we all roll our eyes when we hear the word horse whisperer, but it still holds gravity. Fun fact, I won't tell you how I know this, but the wife of my municipal mayor in my village here in northern Spain refers to me as the horse whisperer in such and such village over there. I won't tell you how I learned that. I found that out. Anyway, I digress. So we agree that horses speak really quietly before they shout. And humans are really good at missing quiet things, especially when quiet things are deemed not as normal, but as not enough or wrong evidence. When the horse is still performing, apparently, or still functioning, still meeting the basic requirements of the people who use them, we wait often for visible breakdown because it's easier to justify now responding to the horse when there's visible breakdown. By the time something is undeniable, it's also much harder to repair. This stands for soundness issues, biomechanical issues, emotional issues, behavioral issues, all of them. By the time something is undeniable, it's also much harder to repair. And here's the uncomfortable truth. And yes, as per usual, I'm speaking on uncomfortable things, but I believe it's really important that we find it within ourselves to look at it together. The early signs of a problem are often the most normalized ones. They're the ones that fit neatly inside what we've been told is normal. So they don't register as information worth taking action on. They register as meaningless or at best background noise. Not because we're cruel. We're not. It's because we're habituated. And habituation is really powerful. It teaches us to live alongside things that should invite curiosity without ever pausing to ask what they mean. Which brings me to talk more about curiosity. Curiosity is a form of care. Curiosity is often framed as a personality trait, and if you look at the work of emotional neuroscientists, curiosity has been studied and often linked to dopamine. But I've gone into great lengths to teach that in other places. I won't teach on that today. You can learn about that in my online course, Homecoming 1. You can go to my website. It's available for sign up at any time, and there are payment plans available for those who need to pay down that course slowly. Homecoming 1, I teach about curiosity and about dopamine and other neuroendocrine factors that influence emotion, and then tie those into different techniques that might tie into those emotions. But curiosity is framed as a character trait and as something you either have or you don't. But I've always found that curiosity is a skill, and just like any skill, it can be practiced or neglected and atrophied if neglected. Curiosity doesn't ask, how do I fix this? It asks, what's happening here? It doesn't ask, how do I fix this, or how do I get what I want? It asks, what's happening here now? It slows the moment down just enough to let more information surface. And when more information surfaces, we can only make more informed and discerning decisions. A word for that is called judgment. Good judgment requires the slowness to stop and ask what's happening here, and then to discuss what we see and what we observe. Curiosity doesn't require certainty. It doesn't require us to know anything. It doesn't require us to be confident. It doesn't require us to be good at something. It just requires us to wonder what's happening here. Therefore, I feel like it can be a really important entryway into care, caring. Because curiosity doesn't demand immediate action. Curiosity refuses to collapse complexity too quickly. And that refusal in our day and age matters. It really matters. Because harm often settles in when things move too fast to be questioned. And slowing that down so that we can ask questions is essential. And that's going to require some refusal. Refusal to collapse complexity too quickly. Nope, I don't think it's that simple. Nope, I don't think that's normal. I don't think it's normal. What is actually happening here? Curiosity, therefore, is not passive, and it's not even a solitary endeavor. It's not even frivolous. It's an ethical stance. It says, I'm willing to stay with what I don't fully understand yet. I'm willing to let the picture be bigger than my expectations right now or assumptions. I'm willing to notice before I take action. Wonder and curiosity keeps harm from settling in under the disguise of normal. Not because curiosity has all the answers, but because curiosity keeps questions alive long enough for us to notice what's happening here. So I guess the point I want to make today is that noticing something is not an accusation or a judgment. And if it is judgment, it's a good form of judgment. You don't have to indict yourself in order to pay attention. You don't have to decide that everything you've ever done was wrong to decide that something deserves a second and even third look. Awareness precedes change, always. So here's a gentle invitation as we close today. First episode of Horse First, which is the Emotional Horsemanship podcast coming to you refocused. My gentle invitation is to notice one thing that you've stopped questioning. Just one. Something that feels ordinary, routine, and unremarkable. And ask quietly, without bad judgment, but with plenty of good judgment, what am I seeing here? You don't have to act yet, and you don't have to fix anything. Just notice. That alone widens the view. And that widening is often where true care begins.